Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hello and welcome to the Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It has been a minute since we discussed the Milwaukee Bucks at length. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, once again host of the show, and I am joined by Bucks luminaries Jim Ozarski and Lori Nickel of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We vow to have this discussion as often as news warranted. And right now it is kind of a low point for the Milwaukee Bucks, who've nonetheless posted a very good record. They're still second in the Eastern Conference, got a 25-12 record coming out of a loss to the Utah Jazz at home on Monday. But this is a tenuous moment. They've lost 4 of 5 games, and the one win against San Antonio, which is again one of the worst teams in the NBA. They had to scratch and claw for it. It was a fun game. We'll talk about it. Giannis versus Victor Wembanyama was pretty sweet, but it was a hard-fought win where you might have expected something a little more comfortable. Nothing coming comfortably for the Bucks right now. And Lori, I'm glad you're here because I think you have a really good sense of the big picture when it comes to the Milwaukee Bucks. I tend to follow it on a game-by-game basis. Obviously, Jim Ozarski does, but I'm buying in a little bit into the concern. The defense has not improved. The problems that they had at the beginning of the year seem to be continuing. Damian Lillard has been in a slump. He has been struggling for a good chunk of the season now. And we can point to the record all we want. The record is great. No doubt about it. They're going to the playoffs. But I think at this point, we are evaluating the Bucks as a playoff team and what can they do in the playoffs. It's past the new year now, and we're still seeing a team that I don't think looks like a championship caliber team. So just off the top, Lori, give me your impressions of the Milwaukee Bucks. How warranted should concerns that fans have be? What do you see when you look at this year's Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, I see things that I never saw before when Mike Budenholzer was coach, and that is that you've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo, whether he's at the podium at the play-in tournament in Vegas or whether he's talking to Jim and Eric down in Houston, you've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo have a call to arms and say, "We're not organized," or and it's not on, it's not working on offense. It's not working on defense. He said that not just a couple of days ago, but he said that a month and a half ago. He's really called things out. Damian Lillard has said on, publicly, we didn't know what the play call was. Bobby Portis has both privately, in team meetings that got leaked in the Chris Hayes report, and then publicly, Bobby Portis has said, we've got issues. We've got identity issues. And then collectively, you see the team talking about playing with pride or lack thereof. Those are unusual for championship caliber type situations. Maybe not unusual for super teams, but they're certainly unusual for the Milwaukee Bucks programs or franchise teams that we've seen under Giannis and Chris Middleton's leadership in the last 5 to 8 years. So when I look at this team right now, I kind of do consider them a hot mess, just because they are still figuring out so much, and they have to do it, in the public eye and with games and with Pacers coming after them hot and everything like that. So they kind of look, I think there's warranted concern, and I've had some concern about the cohesiveness and the play calling, the strategy for a while now, just limited, of course, of what we know on the outside. I'm not an insider. I'm not on the team, et cetera.
Jim, you were there in Houston when Giannis made those comments about all the things that he wasn't seeing from this Bucks team. And if it is an identity issue, that's alarming, I think, because there's just so many veterans on this team. There's no, there's no youth movement coming from underneath. There shouldn't be a conflict here. It should be Giannis and Dame leading the way. Chris Brooke, are obviously the next big ingredients in that stew. And then role players who are doing their part. And I think you have some of that. Giannis is playing at an MVP level. He is dominating people right now, and it hasn't been enough. And that's interesting. Furthermore, any comments about the coach that he makes are interesting, because I'm still operating under the assumption that if Adrian Griffin is here coaching, it's because Giannis gave him his blessing. That's a big I mean, that's Giannis's guy, I have to think, if he's here coaching this team. So what did you make of those comments, and what do you make of the aura around this team when you talk to these players? Is there, are you, I mean, panic too strong? I don't think panic is part of the equation here, but what are you sensing when this team talks about where they are?
Yeah, it's, I think it's more of a broad frustration to Lori's point earlier. I mean, Giannis hasn't been shy. Damian, Chris, I mean, no, these guys have been around too long. They've won too much to sort of mince words, you know, and so there hasn't really been any of that. I think they're saying what they feel and what they believe. So, you know, last night I asked Chris and Giannis about, okay, well, losing 3 of 5, I mean, they haven't lost 5 in a row. They've done that in the last couple of years. Like, what's the sort of the key to this? Cause they've all gone through it and it's never fun. You know, last year, JR, what, through December and January, they were 500 for a month and a half. And Giannis had the famous don't panic speech. Right. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, like a year ago to the date of the Houston game, by the way, you know, so they're not afraid to like say these things. They're what they say is they need to stay together. And I think that's one of those nebulous, and Lori's been in enough locker rooms to know too, like the chemistry, the thing you can't put your finger on, you can't know, are they really together? They talk about adversity and sticking together and when times get tough at the start of the year. Well, here it is for the Bucks right now. You know, they're not playing well. They don't have answers, which is why Giannis, you know, kind of tries to deflect a little bit and says the equipment manager needs to wash their clothes better, all the way up to coach better. Now, look, Adrian Griffin's response to that was interesting. You know, I think we're still getting to know him, and he wasn't, at least to us, upset about that. He said, I agree. And kind of, not that he laughed it off, but kind of chuckled. And I don't think Mike Budenholzer would have had the same reaction, right? But they're different men. They're different types of coaches. So I think they're all still trying to figure out, JR, who they are, how they react to these things. They still talk about finding an identity, and I don't think that's a problem yet. I mean, I agree with Lori in the sort of the broader hot mess situation, but it doesn't mean in February or March that, you know, hot mess bake something good. You know, I think they're allowed that. So I don't know. It's not great, but it's not terrible. Because they're so talented, and I think they're still just trying to figure things out. And honestly, JR and I will get to this. There's problems on the roster that you can't scheme around. That just like, you know, magic coaching isn't going to help certain things. And I think there's a realization the players have to have there too. That they're not the team they were. That decision was made on September 27th when a trade was made. This team changed. And I think there's some, like, even Giannis is going to have to realize they're not the team that they've been the last 5 years. They're a different team. And I think it's a little bit of a struggle for them to find out how they're different and how that different can be good down the line.
I mean, that's a great point. And I think that's what made this job so difficult for Adrian Griffin, first year coach coming into a team that's going through a transformation. That's a really tough ask. And obviously I realize it is about what happens in April, May, June, July, whatever, not July, although that'd be bad. That would be another COVID problem. But I guess though, when you've seen these same issues throughout the course of the year, I can understand why people are starting to get frustrated. Like, at some point you have to turn a corner to be prepared for April, May, and June. Lori, I want to know your overall impression of Adrian Griffin, because so much of this comes back to Adrian Griffin. The Bucks took a risk with him, and I know people are discontented because they're not seeing the signs of a championship caliber team yet. And a lot of that points to Griffin. So I don't know how you feel about him. If you think he's a little bit over his head, we can ask if there's any chance the Bucks would make a coaching change midseason on a team that's won 2 out of every 3 games. I mean, that seems preposterous to even suggest it. So I would imagine the answer is no there, but what have you seen from Adrian Griffin? What is your impression of him to this point now that we're a good chunk of the way through this season?
Well, there's a couple of questions in there. My impression of him or what the players' impressions of him might be two different things.
Very different. Yeah, sure.
But a reminder, though, was he a huge risk as a hire? I mean, he was like the last coach out there who – this great assistant coach who never got his opportunity. I remember Jim did that big extensive piece where a lot of people like vouched for him and his credibility as a basketball mind, not just the nice guy that we know. But so it's certainly we as beat writers knew that it was a risk. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it kind of seemed like the Bucks were really happy with this hire. It made a lot of sense. I would be too speculative right now to read between the lines of what players are telling me, both what they're willing to say on the record and their body language, their vocal inflection. I don't want to do too much of that right now. I don't think that's fair with what I'm reading or picking up on how some of the players feel about Coach Griffin. So I want to hold off on that. I don't like doing that kind of stuff, and I don't want to do that. I will say this, though. My observation is that when you listen to Coach Griffin in practices or post-game press conferences or pre-game press conferences, you don't get a lot of the details that we're sometimes used to when we ask a coach. And not that they give away the playbook. Of course, you don't want to do that. But there are certain questions, strategically, what is your identity? What do you want? What are your priorities on offense? What are your priorities on defense? Some of those questions I still find myself asking, whereas the contradiction of that is Giannis Antetokounmpo, who very specifically in his press conferences said, we need to play better defense. Well, what do you mean by that? Let's start with two things. Better three-point defense, better rebounding. Like, let's just start there. Or if you ask Giannis about very specific offensive plays and flow and where they want the ball to go and what they're trying to do, he will give specific answers. And Giannis has himself several times this year questioned and criticized whether or not they're doing the right thing, or again, back to the we're not organized comment and quote that he made. So I have found myself when I need to try to get answers to provide it for the readership and the fans, that I'm going to the players. I'm going to Malik Beasley, who will, tell me what the strategy is on a certain play, or Giannis for the overall team philosophy, or Chris Middleton, who gives great detail. I'm not yet finding it in the first year head coach, and that's not a knock on him. He may not want to give that away. We know Budenholzer wouldn't even tell us who was starting. 40, what was it, Jim, 90 minutes? It's not a knock. I'm still in observation mode. But one of the things that I look at when you're looking at leadership positions is very specific details, or at least very specific mantras and philosophies of, we are going to be a defense that stops people in the paint, or we're going to be a defense that is going to shut down the three and make it tough. Like, there's going to be clear, declared moments like that. And just for me, and I might have missed it, please tell me, I haven't seen a lot of that yet. And to be fair, this is his first year as the head coach, and he's coaching a bunch of superstars who make more money than like probably the whole total country of Greece. So I don't even know, like, how do you coach all these superstars and not get in their way but also lead them? But that's just something that in my notes I continually am finding the basketball answers from inside the locker room, whereas Budenholzer or other basketball coaches would give some specifics there. But again, it's not a criticism. It's just my read.
Yeah, Lori, I think, that's 100% true. That's been the case from the beginning, where Adrian, said early, it's not about me. It's always about the players. So he has always deflected or just flat out said, I'm not going to say it's the players. The players did this and that. So I don't know if some of that is just him still growing into being a first-year head coach, and just determining what how he feels he can say a thing or not say a thing, and you know, present sort of the same, you know, I don't want to say message, but the same demeanor, or like, you know, hey, I said in the early part of the year, I'm not going to say this stuff. It's about the players. It's about the players. And then now it's not about the players anymore. It's about, so I don't know where that is. And look, I know if you're listening to this or watching it, you'll say, hey, well, he's an NBA head coach. What do you mean? He's still feeling things out. And that's true. But in the bigger picture, I think there is an element of the team he thought he was going to have was turned over 3 months after he took the job. The lead assistant coach he thought he was going to have quit a month after that. And these are things that happened, right? But he's also a first-year coach, and DeLore's last point of you have now two walking Hall of Famers, one of whom is going through it. Damian Lillard is really trying to figure out how to not be the man after 11 years of everything revolving around him. And that's why you could say that's why Adrian Griffin was hired. But at the time, Damian Lillard was not on the team. He wasn't dealing with this would there have been another head coach picked in June if this move had been made in April or May, right? So I don't know. But to Lori's point about the what are we, and that's to Giannis's point. And I think that's where it's a little bit of a disconnect, because you're right, Lori. We can only compare it to what we've seen in the last 5 years in a championship team. The Milwaukee Bucks were, you are not getting to the paint, the rim. We are not going to foul you. JR, how about it? For many years, it was, oh, shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And then they get knocked out of the playoffs. It was like, okay, well, we got to defend threes now. And they were really good at that. This Bucks team, and Giannis has said this early in the year, right after camp, okay, well, we're going to give up something. And I think, Lori, the issue is that fluctuate, or it, I think that's going to fluctuate game to game, as opposed to no rim, no free throws. It's, well, against team A, it's no rim. Against team B, it's no threes. Against team, you know, C, it's no paint. Like, and I want to say that's why Adrian Griffin was hired, because the idea of changing your game plan, changing your strategy on the fly, game to game, is right. That was the issue with Bud. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not, again, there's roster flaws here that may be preventing some of this. There's learning it, and it's not easy. So, Lori, I think you're right. I don't want to crawl into every player's head and how they feel about what's going on, but that's a lot. And then you add in the fact they're supposed to win a championship. It just adds so much to it. So, I mean, we're not going to know until we know, which is at the end of the regular season, essentially. But I think some of that is all why we hear what we hear from the leadership and the players, to Lori's point, in the locker room, and maybe why we don't hear what we don't hear from Adrian Griffin.
You know, I wonder how much of this just gets solved if Damian Lillard is playing at a superstar level. And I mean, that's very simplistic, but it's, yes, they have some flaws in that a couple of their best offensive players, namely Lillard and Malik Beasley, not for lack of trying, are just not the defensive players that they've had in the past manning some of those spots, with the idea being you're going to overwhelm them with offense. And they can't do that if Damian Lillard isn't one of the guys overwhelming them with offense. He gets a ton of touches, rightfully. You know, he's getting opportunities. So I'll start with you, Lori. I guess both of you, I'd be interested, both of you think, like, is it as simple as Damian Lillard, get back to what you were doing before? Like, I don't know if that's attainable because he isn't the focal point the way he was in Portland, but it sure seems like if he were playing at, you know, at full capacity, it's probably the wrong way to put it. I mean, he's just in a slump, but it sure seems like they would be a lot better off, and we wouldn't even be talking about some of these other issues, you know, even on defense. So what do you think, Lori? Is that oversimplifying it?
No, I think it's really hard to pinpoint that the answer to that question. Isn't Jim, isn't this the first time in 3 years that he's fully healthy enough to play the expected to play full season? That's one thing.
Yeah. He hasn't played full year since essentially that bubble. See, like that 66 game, 60. Yeah. It's been a while.
I would love to talk to him and find. I mean, I don't remember if it was November or what, but Adrian Griffin said there's guys on the team who are going through things off the court that are, you know, challenging and difficult. Mm. And, you know, I really respect that. That's hard. They're not robots. And Giannis makes it look insanely attainable. You know, he had a triple double last night, didn't he? In the loss or something. I mean, he just doesn't have a bad game. He's constantly there producing. And so when somebody doesn't live up to this AI caliber or whatever you want to call it, you know, it's called a slump. And to me, it's just normal. I mean, athletes are going to go through these ebbs and flows. As great as he is, The chemistry has not gelled entirely with him yet and his teammates. So many of those things, being in Milwaukee from the day he got here and he was introduced and, you know, the mayor was here and all this kind of stuff, something about it's just I wonder how settled he feels in Milwaukee and with this team. I don't know. I can't even answer this question because I just have more questions for him. And the fact that we don't know, I actually kind of respect, because, you know, sometimes you need to work through these things on your own within your own team and your own practices. But he was counted on so much before he even arrived here with his first flight landing in Milwaukee. He was, you know, relied on so much, maybe too much. And that's a really hard transition for somebody to go for more than a decade, one place to come in and fit in to an entirely new system, new coach, all this kind of stuff. I have a lot of empathy actually for that more than I do trying to pinpoint shot selection for him or Dame time or the final 4 minutes or 8 minutes or wherever he's supposed to take over and save the world. I have more questions than answers. Sorry.
I mean, while I'll agree with, you know, being empathetic, sympathetic to whatever, to the off court stuff. I will agree with JR's premise that on the court, yeah, if he came in as Damian Lillard, they probably at least have a handful more victories. He's shooting 42% from the field, which is his lowest since 15-16. He's only making 35% of his threes, which is his lowest since 14-15.
He's taking way fewer threes too. Taking, you know, a bunch less from last year, like four less.
And he's passing up shots. Like that's, and I know early in the year he had said, I don't want to do certain things that I did in Portland because that's not sustainable offense for Milwaukee. That's not what we're trying to do. So I respect that at, you know, where, hey, I don't want to just be like chucking the ball, but you know, we're in San Antonio, you know, we're in Houston, and he plays the entire first quarter now. You know, I think the Bucks would be okay if he shot it 12 times in the first quarter and not eight. You know, I think the Bucks would be okay if Damian Lillard just put up a three from 27 feet instead of the swing to Marjan Beauchamp. And I understand that that's the right basketball play. And he even said that. He said that in San Antonio. He's like, look, the way this is happening for him, I can make that correct basketball play all day, every day. And so he had 10 assists, Beasley in the corner, Pat Connaughton in the corner, Giannis on the pick and roll. And he was like, this was a game I felt like I needed to score. So he did. He scored 11 points in the fourth quarter, helps the Bucks win. So he's the basketball side, I think he's still figuring out what's what, but even with fewer shots, Yeah, if he's shooting 46% or 45% or 37% from three, like that's such a huge difference with the volume at this point. I think the sample size is big enough where if he had not had the 1-for-9 3-point night, the 4-for-14 field goal, like they win the game. They win the game. Mm-hmm. And this team is built on that now, where this is to the point of the defensive question. This is an offensive team now. And the sooner some of those guys realize that, like they're going to have to make like a handful of stops, but they have to score. And I get why there's frustration with that, because defense wins championships.
Yeah.
This team is not, there's no knock away stolen by Holiday in game five. If they win the finals this year, this is Dame time. This is Giannis triple double time, Chris Middleton 18 footer time. Like, and so, yeah, if he, whatever the issues may be off the court, on the court, if he just shoots a little better and there's some other guys that make some more shots, that they win more games.
I'm so sick of defense wins championships. That idiom is so stupid. You've got to be good at both. Of course you've got to be good at both, but like it's just not true. Good defensive teams do not win championships regularly. Good offensive teams win championships all the time. So I don't know where that idiom came from.
And you can be good at both too. Can I just say, just want to interject here. You know, it's not like Mike Budenholzer had these incredible defensive stunts and blitzes and trickery and all this kind of stuff. You know, Grayson Allen, who used to play with the Bucks and doesn't anymore, I would ask him all the time, what are you doing on defense? What are you supposed to be doing? Because he worked on it a lot. And he said a lot of times it really is comes down to effort. It's about just deciding right then and there, I'm going to beat this guy. And you do have to sacrifice other parts of your game, whether it's energy level or the energy output that Giannis talked about, I think last night or a couple of days ago, that sometimes you're giving it all and sometimes you're too tired. But the point Grayson Allen was making was sometimes it really is just go out and make a play. So I respect you, Jim, 1,000%, but defense can be, I mean, rebounding is rebounding. That's how, that's how a lot of us like made it on a team, is because of hustle and defense. And at this level, the idea that, NBA players don't play defense, it's garbage. This team can play defense. Yes. They need a strategy and a philosophy, and they need to know what their priorities are, 1, 2, and 3, and know what the mission is as a group. And they can do it. Bobby Portis can still do stuff. Brooke, you know, they can. In the beginning of the year, Malik Beasley at least wanted to put forth the defensive effort and said, you know, I'm the new Jrue Holiday. Now, he said it, you know, like I need to do my part. But I don't agree with the notion that good offensive teams can't play defense. I think you can. It depends on roles, switching, all that kind of stuff, but I think it can happen.
Sure. And this team does it. Like, they gave up 77 in the first half to Utah and 23 in the third quarter. They gave up 65 in the first half to Houston and 26 in the third quarter. In Cleveland, Laurie, J.B. Bickerstaff, I asked about, hey, what do you see with this Bucks defense? Because it's clearly different. And he goes, they can get stops on command at times. And what does that mean? When they all decide to try and decide to rebound, they can get stops. And so, again, you know, I've never been a fire the coach guy. It's the coach's fault thing. No, that's a pay attention and try hard thing. And that's, if this team's going to go to Eastern Conference Finals or win a championship, they're going to have to make stops, and they're capable of it. It's just not like 2 years ago in Boston, where they played historic level defense but couldn't score because Chris Middleton was hurt. Like, historic defense did them no good because they couldn't make a basket. Now they have people that they can make a basket. They just need to try a little harder and pay a little more attention. And I don't know, to Laurie, you're right, like, are the game plans being communicated thoroughly enough and understood enough? Okay, that's a coaching to player communication issue. But for the most part, we can tell, they're deciding the defensive rebound today. Look at that. And then there's times where that's just, they're not doing it. And that's not that's a them thing. And, you know, where and when they figure that out, if they figure that out, I guess we'll see.
I think one of the alarming things defensively is that up until the Jazz game, teams were hanging with the Bucks or beating the Bucks without shooting the lights out from 3-point range, where they were probably shooting a little bit lower than you might expect, especially on open threes, making you think that all a team has to do is kind of come back to the median and they'll have a much better shot of beating the Bucks. And then we get to a Jazz game where a team did shoot the lights out. And I don't even, it doesn't matter to me if they're a losing team. If a team comes in and hits all their threes, they're going to win the game. So that's not even that big of a loss in my mind. It's more the pattern of, I would say, the other losses where teams aren't shooting that well and still finding ways to beat the Bucks. That would be a problem in my mind. Jim, I don't think you can look at one player's return and say that's going to heal a defense. Defense doesn't work like that. But Jay Crowder, as you've written at jsonline.com, is getting closer to coming back. He's been gone for a while. He was obviously a guy that the Bucks believed in. Bringing him back, you know, maybe choosing him over the head coach, as we've talked about before, like not quite apples, you know, it doesn't quite work like that. But the philosophy was bring Jay Crowder back and maybe not Mike Budenholzer back. I think he's going to help a lot if he's truly at full strength. I don't know how much he can help a lot when the defense is where it is, but I got to think it's a step in the right direction. Can one guy be a little bit of a turning point, I guess, if not a difference maker on defense?
Yeah, I mean, on a broad sense, yes. Jay was hurt 9 games into the season when the first 4, you know, were really in flux and they went back to drop. And, you know, so it's hard to really judge him from those 9 games. And then the fact he was like, oh, yeah, I kind of had this torn adductor muscle anyway, if he was playing through it. So on one hand, you're like, well, he looked actually pretty good for what they were asking. Back then, it's sort of a different defense right now. I mean, physically, he looks better than the guy that I saw come in after 9 months off last February or March or whenever that was. He feels physically better because he had this pain that he began the season with. He's like, I have no pain now. The bench has been short. The bench, like, they're not and they've been hurting production wise points, you know, looking for matchups that could work. So yeah, Jay, look, we'll see how quickly he can reintegrate and truly what he looks like. But, you know, yeah, he was brought back to defend, to be the 6'6" guy, you know, that can get out there. Now, he's not Wesley Matthews. That's not Jay Crowder's, like, bag. Like, he's not out on the perimeter much, and that's an issue defensively. But, you know, he's a stronger guy. And, you know, for instance, this week, you know, he'd be a guy that's on a Jason Tatum. Or, you know, when they go on the West Coast, the Naren Gordon or you know, Kevin Durant. Like, he's big enough to that those are going to be his assignments. So, I guess we'll see. But it definitely can't hurt JR and Lurie because – the bench has been really short. The rotations are kind of funky because of that. The matchups haven't been great because of that. So, yeah, having one. Look, he was like their sixth man the first 9 games of the season, playing 26 minutes a game. Yeah. So just that alone is going to help. I mean, it can't hurt. I mean, they've been so at times so bad that it definitely cannot hurt.
Laurie, I want to ask about another player because you're speaking of the bench and a sixth man. Bobby Portis has been down a little bit this year. He's not getting quite as many minutes, but it's still a pretty marked drop, I would say, in shooting percentage, which is from 3-point range has really kind of torpedoed over the last, you know, 4 years since he's been here. This is not one of the guys who's aging out. You know, he's still only 28 years old. His rebounding has gone down. His usage has gone down a little bit, but it's a pretty big drop from 9.6 rebounds per game last year, where he almost averaged a double-double, to now 6.6. 12 points per game is down a full 2 points from where he was last year, and even more if you look back to the 21-22 season. And it isn't really – I don't want to even just zoom in on him. It's other guys too, like Pat Connaughton, who's been hurt, but – you know, he's, I think, still trying to get up to full speed coming off the bench. You got a guy like Cameron Payne, who's, you know, up and down a little bit. I think if you want to look at some defensive struggles, like, that's probably baked into it as well. So I want to ask specifically about Bobby, Laurie, but there are others on that bench too, who I think, you know, it's just guys that you've counted on maybe just aren't clicking on all cylinders, I guess is the cliche, but maybe the best way to say it.
Again, I go back to the very simple, you know, Bobby has been outspoken both on the record and in privately in the team locker room of, you know, I need certain specific play calls. We need structure, I think was the wording, right, Jim, or something. And this might just be a problem of having too many riches. I don't know. I mean, when you look at that starting lineup, who are you going to pull out, you know, and have Bobby get the minutes that he needs? I just think it's a tough balance right now. I just have questions because Bobby has been vocal about not being, not necessarily unhappy, but having questions himself of what direction are we supposed to be going in. And he had, his questions were specifically offensively, I believe, when he had the, when he was confronting Coach Griffin in the team locker room and the report that came out. So I, you know, he has always prided himself on getting those garbage time rebounds. I don't see a lack of effort there. I don't see somebody who's detached or in it for himself. I don't see somebody who's not trying to be competitive. I don't see somebody who's battling resiliency. So when all those other things line up the way you would expect them to with somebody like a pro, like Bobby Portis, to me, then it's a schematic or a role definition problem and, or something that they're working out. And one thing that I would like to say, I do like that they're talking about this now and kind of addressing it now rather than saying, don't panic, because what happened in April when they didn't even advance past Jimmy Butler in the playoffs has to be fresh on some of their minds and still a continuous motivating factor. And so trying to figure this out and ironing this out now seems logical to me. And again, this is another one of those where I think they're still working it through because they have the super team.
And look, somebody messaged me, why isn't Giannis taking rest days? Why is he playing so much? And I was like, wait a minute. That's a problem all of a sudden?
The NBA would intervene at this point.
He's playing 35 minutes a game. Adrian Griffin's Toronto Raptors teams, the Tom Thibodeau teams, all of their starters play a lot. And yeah, Dame's playing 35 minutes a game. Giannis 35, Brooke 31. Malik Beasley almost 30. Chris has been 30 plus since he's been allowed to do that. Jay Crowder's at 26. So like the bench in and of itself, well, now Crowder is on the bench, but like the bench minutes, generally speaking, were going to be reduced under this team. The starters play more. And like Bobby, it's interesting, JR. So like after the Vegas game, when that conversation was leaked from the locker room, I mean, Bobby caught fire. I mean, look at the numbers here. 60% shooting, 48% from three, 17 points a game, almost 8 rebounds, 26 minutes a game. In the last six, so just after, right before the new year, minutes have decreased to 19, and the shooting has cratered. So I don't know. I mean, it's just sort of a bad stretch of time where Damian Lillard and Bobby Portis are not making baskets. And look, this Bobby is the guy who has to score off the bench. Like Pat's there to make a couple threes. Campaign is there to make a couple baskets. Like Bobby's mm-hmm. the engine of the second unit. He's playing more with Brooke and Giannis, which is a little different for him. The spacing's different, you know? So I think everyone, to Lori's points earlier, they're also just kind of going through it. And where do you fit? How do you look for yours type of thing? But generally speaking, yeah, the starters are playing more. This is a top heavy roster. And you would argue, I'd rather have Giannis play 35 minutes than 30. Right. So, you know, no offense to Bobby, but like, you know, so that's part of this too. And just finding out, Bobby has always said this, right? Be a star in your role. And I think he's can be that. He has been that in stretches this season. I think it's just a matter of, you know, again, finding it on that more consistent level when some of the other variables are less consistent.
I want to go back because we haven't podcast since the Pacers kind of took it to the Bucks at the start of the new year, back-to-back games, won four games against Milwaukee this year. There was a point where the Bucks had 10 losses and 40% of them were to the Indiana Pacers, a good team, a great offensive team. And actually they had a little bit of a scare as we write this on, or as we record this Monday night, Tyrese Halliburton left the game with what looked like a really bad injury. And it turns out it's probably not as bad as feared. It's going to cost him a couple weeks, most likely, maybe a few weeks, but Halliburton's likely to be okay for the big part of the season. I mean, he's a problem for the Bucks. That team is a problem for the Bucks, and previous installments of the Bucks, even when they were having their struggles or even when there were red flags, it was like, well, okay, but I still don't think there are teams out there that can just beat this team, you know, 4 out of 7 games. There aren't many that can do that. And then the Indiana Pacers went ahead and did that, you know, obviously 4 out of 5. And, you know, kind of, I think, presented a blueprint of the type of team that can beat the Bucks. There are other teams like this that could find a way past the Bucks. And, you know, that it's all part of the conversation of they're still improving. Who are they going to be at the end of the year isn't necessarily who they are right now. But to me, that is a concern. They could easily see the Pacers, first of all, in the postseason. That's a very possible matchup. But I also just feel like it gives them a vulnerability that maybe I didn't previously believe they had over the past few years. What I guess, I mean, Laurie, I know you talked to like Tyrese Halliburton, and I know that you were watching this team against the Pacers. I don't know if you saw anything that's like, yeah, that's something the Bucks just don't have an answer for right now, or this is a huge red flag that there's one team that can do this. But give me your sense of that rivalry, and if you think it speaks to something larger about what the Bucks are going to be able to do when they get into a playoff series.
Well, the two things that Giannis asked for improvement on of his own team was defensive three-point defense. And the Pacers just beat the Bucks on New Year's Day, shooting 5 of 35 from three-point range. So they did well there. And then Giannis also wanted better rebounding. Well, they were tied in rebounding on that New Year's Day win from the Pacers. The big difference with that game and with these two teams is bench production. And I disagree with you, Jim. I think Giannis should have rest days and should play 30 minutes. Your mother has spoken. The basketball mom wants rest. But I, you know, the Pacers just are relentless too. And it's not even matchup problems. It's just the way they played, the tenacity with which they played. What's the right word? Bully isn't the right word, but just like matching at your energy with also fierce energy. There's a lot of that. So the Pacers are really, really good. Hopefully this injury isn't too bad for them. I think this will be a great postseason matchup. But the bench was the difference in that, between those two teams. I think even going back to what you saw in Vegas.
Jim, what do you think? Does the Pacers create a pretty big red flag?
Yes, in the sense that it's not a good matchup for the Bucks, and frankly, they weren't a good matchup last year when the Bucks were the 58 win team, first seed, and the Pacers were nothing. The Pacers gave them all kinds of problems because the Pacers are young and fast and play hard for 48 minutes, and the Bucks are older, don't play fast. And as we have talked about, don't always play hard for 48 minutes. It's just the Pacers are that perfect sort of regular season team where when veterans are like, not really feeling it in January and February, those guys, they're all in. We want to win in February. And they win the game. And so, I mean, Malik Beasley said this, and I kind of agree with him on a podcast where he's like, if we see the Pacers in the playoffs, it'll be a little different. And while the Pacers, I'm sure, will win a game or two, maybe if that were to be a 1-8-2-7 kind of matchup, I do agree with that because the playoffs is just a different thing. You know what? The Bucks have lost 12 games. A third of them have been to one team. It's just not a good matchup. And you know, it'll be a concern and something to talk about if they see each other But I don't know if down the line it portends any disaster, so to speak. I think, you know, Philadelphia doesn't play that way. Miami doesn't play that way. Orlando doesn't play that way. Cleveland, New York can run a little bit. So, you know, it's just the Bucks will have to figure something out on how to slow them down. Or frankly, Giannis will just have to average 51 and a half a game, which he can very easily do, and they win in five games, right? So I'm not discounting the Pacers. They're a fun story. They're clearly on the ascent. Maybe they make a big trade deadline move, and, you know, this changes some things if they add some defense. But, yeah, you know, they're fun, and it's just a lot of what they do doesn't fit against the Bucks. But in a seven-game, two-week series, I mean, the Bucks are more talented, and I'll always lean on that.
Yeah.
I just – Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler, that's all. I know different, but they got a gentleman sweep, the Bucks did, in April. They can't be talking smack about anybody. Sorry.
No, and that's – I mean, no, but –
No, you're smart. You know more than me, for sure. I'm argumentative to poor JR. I'm sorry.
It was 4-1. I will give Indiana that respect, and they deserve to throw behind the back passes and alley oops off the backboard and talk all of their stuff. They deserved it because they have nothing for Giannis. And I think after the 64-point game, those next two, he just casually dropped triple doubles and tried to get everyone involved. And they have nothing for him. And that's if they're healthy, like we're not going to relitigate the Miami series, but like if Chris and Giannis are healthy, like that's not I still don't think that's a thing. And Bud, that's right. Bud got fired because that there were problems there that weren't addressed. But anyway, Indiana deserves their respect. They're 21-15 and are doing some fun stuff. I think we'll see JR and Lori, like Boston's coming up, you know, when they make this West Coast trip and it's Denver and Phoenix and some of these good teams, you know, we'll get a real, real good sense of, cause those are different. Those are matchups, I guess, that aren't just like run, bunch of 24-year-olds run, you know. I am curious to see how the Bucks reacted to those teams as well.
If you told me today that the Bucks were playing the Pacers in a seven-game series and you'd set the over-under at Giannis averaging 40 points, I'd say it's going to go seven games and Giannis and I would take the over because Giannis absolutely crushes against that defense. that's been fun to watch. All right, we're getting close to wrapping up here. I did, Jim, want to ask about, because it's not all doom and gloom, the matchup between Giannis and Victor Wembanyama. It's our generation's Kareem versus Wilt. I posted that picture the night it was happening. Victor Wembanyama had a tremendous game, a tremendous flourish at the end. He's not had like a, you know, superstar season for as much hype as he's had, but obviously he's still very, very good. He's going to be in the rookie of the year conversation, although he's going to have to wrestle it away from Chet Holmgren at this point. But he's a pretty special talent, and he's going to be special for a long time. And it was really fun to see he and Giannis going back and forth, Giannis making some MVP plays to help the Bucks win that game, which really came down to a buzzer beater. You know, like it ended up being more than a one possession game, but only because of some late free throws. It could have gone the other way. You were there. I just want your impression of that and kind of what captured your imagination as you watched those two guys going back and forth, something we're not going to see in Milwaukee this year, unfortunately, but surely it'll be something we see again going forward.
Yeah, that was, I'm very happy I was there. That's being in attendance, and Lori can speak to this too. Like these people were around, these men and women who are the top, 1% of the human population. We're around them so much and they are people to us. So I think sometimes we just, you know, we've seen stuff, right? Like Lori has seen Jordan Love's back foot, one-handed sidearm throw into a shoebox touchdown against the Bears. She's seen that in the last 30 years, right? Doesn't mean you can't appreciate it when you see stuff. And like, The Giannis Victor thing was so fascinating because for as dominant as Giannis has been, it wasn't like him and Joel. It wasn't like him and Jokic. It was someone of a similar skill set who can pull up from three, who can block shots from behind and recover in reverse, and someone who wasn't afraid. Now, Joker's not afraid. Joel Embiid maybe is finally getting to a point where he'll go a full 48 minutes. But it was really cool. Like, and Giannis says he doesn't pay attention. He says he doesn't play basketball or watch basketball. He says he doesn't care what other players
do. The lies.
Which totally, yeah. It was really fascinating to see him make the decision that I am going to show you something, young fella. I'm going to dunk on your face left-handed, and I'm going to block your shot. And it was really interesting to see the 20-year-old on his birthday say, okay, I'm going to dunk on your face and block your shot. And then Victor hasn't made any threes. He steps into a three. Giannis has made no threes, and he steps into threes. Like, we haven't seen – Lori, I mean, I missed the couple years in between their early bud. But there was no big man like this where Giannis was like, this is the Giannis one-on-one game, right? Like that clearly was a decision that was made by both of those guys. And we were all better for it. It was absolutely incredible. It was really cool. It kind of sucks that they only play twice a year. San Antonio's a long way away from winning championships. The Bucks may be on their way down from that point circle the dates, and hopefully Greg Popovich and whoever, Adrian, whomever, are like, yeah, they should play these two games. The rest day, Lori's rest day can come against someone else, you know, because we deserve to see that if and when possible. It was pretty incredible by both players.
All right, let's close down with some good vibes. Keep it going. Lori, I'm curious if you have any other, because we've talked about the negative, any positive thoughts about the Milwaukee Bucks? I'll start real briefly. I just, having seen Giannis play this year, I think the Bucks will bounce back. I think they'll get back into the Eastern Conference title conversation. And I think Giannis will be a serious, serious contender to win his third MVP. He's just having such a special year, and it is kind of coming under the cover of darkness because there's still guys narratively ranked ahead of him. I think by the end of the year, that's going to change a little bit. But Lori, what else have you seen that you want to point out before we get out of here?
I have never been this negative before about such a good team. It's so unusual for me. So I hope that this
you should
is all
spend time on Bucks Twitter, because let me tell you, we can find a way.
I do want to make it clear that these are questions right now. We are in observation mode. They are not, you don't need to keep any receipts. There's no, you know, predictions here, anything like that. But I do think there's a time to focus on winning plays and positive and surviving. And there's a time for perfectionism and drilling down and getting to the problems and striving for more. And that's where I think the Bucks are right now. And I actually really respect that. I also think the equipment manager needs to do the best job they can. Like, the detail, you've got somebody really special in Giannis in that caring about every detail. It's just like you and your job, or you and your family, whatever you put your stock into, whatever your worth is as a person, you care about all the details. You care about things that people say, don't worry about that. No, if you worry about everything and you look at every shadow and every corner and every dust bunny, please, let's appreciate that. I like that. Now's the time to do this. And so I think it's very weird for me to be so negative. I hope this doesn't come across as truly being negative. It's more like this team can strive for more and has that as a goal. So it's good that they are airing it out now. I like confrontation like this because I think it can be healthy and productive as long as still everybody is still in. So to me, the positive is that there's this conversation that's continuing. And, you know, remember, above all, Giannis said, this is a partnership with Adrian Griffin. They wanted to work with him. You know, this whole, we are not the fire everybody. This is not that podcast. We are not this group. We don't do that here with it, you know. So let's see what they can do with this in the next month. If this is the midterm grades, let's see how they can improve up and bring some of these C's up to B's in some of the areas.
Yeah, I look, they're 25-12, you know, two games or three games in the loss as we record this, 25-12, you know, three games separate, you know, the two seed from the eighth seed. I mean, the East is a good conference. They're good teams. And, you know, the Bucks, other than Indiana, have shown well. You know, Boston didn't start well, ended okay in a loss. We'll see how that goes in those games going forward. Yeah, there's a lot to like about what they're doing. You see, you know, flashes of things. And again, even in their worst moments, Utah, Houston, you see really good defensive basketball. On days when you're like, the offense is not clicking, you see really good offensive basketball. You have, as JR said, an MVP candidate. You've got a guy who is an all-NBA player that's not quite in it yet or at full capacity in whatever fashion. And yet your three-time All-Star who's been hurt for 2 years, looks totally healthy, and is on that 50, 40, 90, 20 points a game thing that, you know, he had been doing for 8 years. So like there's a lot here. And it's just, I think it goes back to when you start a year with a title aspiration and then only add another top 75 all time player. It changes everything. And it's just, it just, everything is such a microscope. And to Lori's point, yeah, I mean, they're halfway through or about there. And there's still a long way to go. And so, yeah, I think, again, a lot to like. And it's just, I think you see why Adrian Griffin was hired at times. And I think you see a first-time head coach with some assistants who are in new roles for the first time as well. Like, I think there's a lot of new, and it's not football. You know, what was it, Lord? What's the math? Like one football game is like 12 baseball games and eight basketball games. Like it just takes a little longer to get through some of this stuff. And, you know, their top end talent is so, so good that they're going to win a lot. And it's just a matter of, do they, to Lori's, the dustbin, the corners, the fine, fine details. That's what they're working toward. And Yana said that. He's like, even in losses like this, what's that little thing that was good today that you, it's not, he's not saying build good habits as much anymore, but I mean, that's what that is. And so it's just, okay, stacking those until, you know, they get to that first round of the playoffs in April.
All right. He is Jim Ozarski. She is Lori Nickel. Find everything they have at jsonline.com. The Milwaukee Bucks season, of course, carries on. Jim will have full updates from every game. Lori, you might see her write about a whole bunch of sports as our columnist in the sports department at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Point Forward podcast. We will be back again in short order, and we will talk to you again then. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast. A Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.